Vokrace was furious. After all they had accomplished, that pighead of a ship pack commander was going to let two more shiploads board. He knew what that would mean. They'd be claiming credit for kills he and his men had made. They'd be marking loot.
There is no need! We have the ship at our mercy. Only the troops aboard Deathblade are needed. What if the Familius ships are following? If you take two more ships out of formation, how will you beat them off?
You assured me they could not follow, having no idea where you are.
The ship pack commander sounded entirely too complacent. When Vokrace had started this mission, the ship pack command had been promised to his own war clan. Now it had gone to the Antbird Comity, on whose graves he would spit if he got the chance. And here was another one, not even an Antbird, but a hireling. He had met Beerling at the arena once and hadn't liked him. He wanted to slug someone, and unfortunately they'd dumped the Serrano cub for safekeeping before they came to T4.
I claim the ship. I claim the bloodshed and the riches won, the deaths and the treasures for the men who won them.
It's big enough to share the glory, and soon enough to divide the loot when the deed is done.
The deed is done.
You need not fear my justice. Unless you want to challenge my honor.
I do not challenge your honor. Only remember who opened this ship like an oyster.
You are not likely to let me forget. The troops in Deathblade will await the arrival of those from Antbird's Axe and Antbird's Helm before they maneuver.
In other words, Vokrace would have no chance to show the Deathblade troops, whose commander he knew well, how he had conquered. The others would overwhelm everything.
May his wife grow spines in her fur.
If only it were possible.
So we have to wait around for them all to land? Assuming those incompetents can actually land on the test cradles and get inside. Just stand here like targets?
He would not be ill-pleased if any of these people did kill us. Greedy swine. We should be extremely careful, Pack Second. There's no reason with so many eager to find loot for us to take risks.
Perhaps we might even disappear.
Not that, I think. After all, our people are in charge on the bridge. Perhaps we should go back and be sure they know who's being so helpful.
Assassination on a mission was unusual but not unheard of, and Vokrace felt in the mood to kill someone.
Let these people find their own way in. It would be good practice for them. Not all boardings are unopposed.
Esme had just made it back to T3 when she was called to one of the communications nodes.
I hear we're about to be trapped in here.
Not for long. We're going to take the ship behind you and the one coming into the T4 test cradle. As soon as we're clear, they'll warp Wraith out.
Better odds. Save me one, why don't you? I presume you'll be taking one of them yourself.
Yes, the one behind you. Commander Bowery's already got his crew over in T4.
Who's gonna take the one that's docked? Or are you gonna leave that one where it is?
Leave it. We don't have the crew.
And I presume you have a plan to get the test cradle on board? What if they dump their troops and take off again?
In that case, you're not blocked, and Bowery can take the ship of theirs that's in T4. But what we hear through their transmissions is that they're planning to stay a while. It's made the commander leader mad. He thinks they're stealing his glory.
Good. And good luck, Lieutenant.
Esme went back to the command center set up in the 14th's headquarters area.
I've got a list of volunteers for your crew, Lieutenant. You seem to be quite popular. They're sorted by specialty, then rank-ordered by those with experience in ships similar to the enemy's. I told them to wait for you in R-17.
That's wonderful, sir.
It was indeed. The only problem was knowing how many she should take.
We've got a link now to the other wings. One of the instructors over in Admiral Levati's command has done a tactical analysis. He suggests...
They're going through somewhere.
They're not even off that ship yet. We've been watching.
Then it's the others. The original intruders. But why? And where?
Warn the bridge. That'll be where they're going. They may not know we've taken them back. Lieutenant Sweeza, pick your crew and get in position. I think we can ignore that tactical analysis.
Esme took the list and looked at it on her way down to R-17. Petty Major Simpkins, Drives and Maneuver, had operated the commercial equivalent of the Blood Horde hulls during the 3 years he'd tried making it in the civilian world. Two others had less, but some experience with those ships. Scan. No one had a lot of relevant experience, but there was a pivot major, Lucien Patel, that the entire remote sensing unit thought was another Kutsudis. Worth a try, anyway. For backup in Scan, she picked the one person with recent combat experience, and another because he had both commercial and military background. Communications, that was critical. That one, and that one, and a backup. Environmental, she wouldn't worry about. They'd fight in their suits, and either win this in a hurry or die in a hurry. Weapons. She really needed good weapons people. There were five that seemed to stand out from the rest of the list. When she got to the meeting place, she was startled by the eagerness on their faces. They looked at her as if she could make this mad enterprise easy. She felt her own heart lift, and gave them back the grin they seemed to be waiting for.
Told you, she's got a plan.
Not yet, she didn't, but she did have a crew list. She read it out, and those named came forward. Others looked disappointed. A burly sergeant, who looked vaguely familiar, stepped forward.
Can't you use a few more? If there's someone aboard, if there's a fight, I've won my share of barroom brawls.
Extras with that attitude couldn't hurt. Esme nodded, and another half dozen clustered around. Others lingered, but didn't come forward.
The rest of you, if you haven't heard, some of the original intruders have gone back into the rest of the ship, and there are plenty of troops coming in. I'm sure you can think of something appropriate to do. The plans we had for dealing with the troops aboard one Blood Horde ship now need to work for three times that number.
The really worrisome problem was how to get to the drives test cradles unobserved. Both repair bays were now open and floodlit, so that any movement across the gap might be seen if the Blood Horde were looking for it. Even though she and Bowery both had guides, specialists who were test cradle supervisors, so that they could approach the keel of the test cradle rather than its upper deck where ships rested, they would be in sight of anyone watching from the repair bays for part of the distance. Esme did not want to trust that no one would glance over and notice a string of EVA suits going the wrong direction.
We need something else to get their attention. More smoke and mirrors. Like we used to get the intruders well into T4, but big enough to enthrall however many of them come out.
If we turned the lights out, they couldn't see you as well.
Not at first, but they probably have lights of their own. They'll be expecting something.
And we're supposed to have been partially disabled. What if our lights go off, then flicker back on? If they've got those fancy faceplates on their helmets, that would give them fits.
I'll bet we can look really inept. Fluctuations in the artificial gravity, flickering lights. It could seem like the power's out of control.
But not until we're on our way. That means after most of them are off the test cradles. The timing's going to be tight.
Trust us, Lieutenant. We're trusting you.
Fine. I'll leave it to you then. Come on, folks. Let's get suited up and see about wiping out a Blood Horde battle group. Or whatever they call themselves.
The Blood Horde ships disgorged EVA-suited figures in clumps that reminded Esme of strings of frog spawn in the lily ponds back home. Little, shiny blobs, two and three together, silvery in the light from the repair bay. They kept coming and kept coming, more than Esme would have thought would fit in such a small ship.
Do they know how visible they are?
Probably. It helps them find each other, after all. Although I don't know if other ships they attack have so much light outside. It's depressing to think how visible we're going to be.
EVA suits were intended to be seen. It was a safety feature.
Too bad we didn't think to spray ourselves matte black or something.
Esme's gaze fell on the rolls of sheathing for Wraith's denuded flanks.
The skin. The sheathing. Those rolls. They wouldn't shine. If only we thought of that earlier. But now they'd see us if we tried to use them.
It's easy enough to peel off the hull. Just takes a sonic generator set at the right frequency, depolymerize the adhesive. What were you thinking, wrap it around you? It's not that flexible.
How flexible is it?
It'd make a roll about this big.
The man held out his arms.
In other words, several of us would fit into it, in our suits?
Oh, sure.
Would it be any good against scans?
Most of them, certainly, small as you'd be.
But they had no time. It could take an hour to cut and roll enough tubes, and they didn't have an hour. Esme put that thought out of her mind.
What else might give us some cover?
Well, we can't use the high-speed sprayers in the repair bays, because they'd see it. And besides, that's part of the plan.
Esme wondered what plan, but didn't interrupt to ask.
But there's the little hand sprayers in the small parts coating work bay.
One of the EVA suit techs shot down that idea. Paint might eat through the fabric, and they had no time to experiment. So they prepared to go as they were, silvery suits and all, when one of the cook's assistants came running up with an armload of dark green waste sacks.
We look like a row of peas in a pod.
Better than silver beads. At least they're dark and not shiny.
Ahead of Esme, the base of the test cradle loomed, clearly visible in the light from the repair bay. Visible, too, was their shadow, enlarging as they neared. In its center was the little red blinking dot of the rangefinder on her helmet, giving her the distance and rate of approach.
Now.
The lights went out. She had only her helmet readout to go on, and a single chance to make any adjustments that had to be made. But presumably, the Bloodhorde attackers would be startled by the change in light. They'd be looking for people in the repair bays, where they were. Seb Caron had told her about night fighting, that no one could resist looking to see where a light had just come on or gone out. Nearer, 5 meters, 4. She pushed the makeshift control, and a little jet of gas spewed out. She felt the shove as if the ones behind her were leaning on her back. 3 meters. A very slow progression to 2, then 1. Then she tucked her head, rolled, and felt her boots thud on the hull. Her knees took up the impact easily. The base of the drive's test cradle was a maze of cables and attachments, but the test cradle supervisor they'd found knew where the nearest hatch was. Once inside, they rose through the shaft with only short tugs on the line. Then they were at the upper hatch, and Esme peered through. There was the Bloodhorde ship, an angular, dark bulk against the starfield. She couldn't tell if it was occupied, not until she had the instruments in the test cradle up and running. It was a job for the supervisor, who fumbled around for a moment, then...
It's got active scan leaking all over it. Can't do much without them noticing. Good thing is, with them putting out that much, they're not likely to notice anything we put on the cable. Want me to signal Koss?
Yes.
In moments, the signal came back. Their arrival had been logged, and they were waiting for Bowery's report from the other test cradle. Esme reminded herself that his team had had longer to travel, that they had crossed below the line of the Bloodhorde troops coming in. Then, when she thought she couldn't wait another moment, the signal came.
Ready? Go.
This was only one tricky bit in the many tricky bits of the plan. Keeping it simple had not been an option. They needed to focus Bloodhorde attention on the repair bays, away from the assault teams who were after Bloodhorde ships. What they had to work with was more in the nature of hand-waving and colored smoke than real weaponry or the skill to use it. But to the repair crews of a DSR, hand-waving and colored smoke was second nature. Esme didn't know what they were going to do, only that it would occur in 60-second bursts of maximum distraction, they hoped.
The Serrano Legacy, Once a Hero, is continued on the next CD.